This week marks the 50th anniversary of President Lyndon Johnson's call for an unconditional war on poverty. That was followed by the introduction of some of the safety nets we see today, like food stamps and Medicare.
By some measures, the struggle to end poverty has succeeded, at least in part. For example, it greatly reduced poverty among the elderly. But many say the war ended without victory and that it might be time to relaunch that effort. Here with us to talk about the war on poverty and where we stand now is Philip Cohen. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families. Philip, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
What prompted the war on poverty in 1964?
Well, we were coming off a period of prosperity and economic growth, and also a time of rising demands in terms of civil rights and women's rights. And there was a sense that government not only could but should respond to the needs of large numbers of people who were in pretty dire straits at the time.
Was this a bipartisan effort?
Well, it started by Johnson, but certainly carried on by Nixon without a strong, without a big change with the change in the party in the White House. Nixon went on to continue Johnson policies, including increasing Social Security payments and even proposed a guaranteed income at one point, which didn't quite succeed. But Nixon was also on board for sure.
And what's happened to the war on poverty since then?
Well, you know, the programs expanded greatly, like you mentioned, especially food stamps, Medicare and Medicaid, school lunches, and really lifted the floor for people who were at the bottom of the income ladder. And that went on through the 70s and into the 80s. And, you know, there was a big economic shift. The economy turned around in some ways. We had two bad recessions in the 80s, a shift in the political mood, a decline in labor unions. You know, the whole gestalt changed. And all of a sudden, the size of these war on poverty programs came to be a sign of failure rather than a sign of success. So the number of people who were receiving AFDC, the welfare for single mothers, poor mothers at the time, or food stamps, was a sign that we were failing rather than a sign that we were helping people in need. And the political winds changed into the 90s.
Let's talk about some of the people who were affected. Now, in particular, the elderly, how did they fare?
Well, that was the biggest early success, was cutting poverty for the older population, which was growing and continues to grow now. And that was the biggest thing was Medicare, but also the expansion of the other programs and disability benefits also helped the elderly a lot. Children also had declining poverty rates, not quite as dramatic, and their gains were not as secure, so that in the last 10 years, as we've seen poverty start to creep back up, it's been more dramatically for children than it has been for the elderly. And that's because of the families that poor children are in are not benefiting from, don't have the same programs available to them that elderly people do for their support.
Now, how does the U.S. compare when we're looking at child poverty with other developed nations?
Well, the interesting thing about our poverty is that we have a higher poverty rates when you after you take into account government support, taxes, and transfers. So the number of people we have at low incomes is not actually that much higher than other countries. But we do less to reduce poverty. So the government does less to compensate for the fact that people have lower incomes. So, for example, the poverty rate for single mothers and their children in this country is much higher than it is in most of Western and Northern Europe.
Is the war on poverty over? Did it ever have an end point, or is it something that just sort of trickled away?
Well, the political sociologist David Meyer commented today that it was unfortunate to call it a war on poverty because that's very difficult to ever declare victory in or finish. But in some ways, I would say we don't have one now. It's not so much won or lost, but we don't have a concerted, coordinated campaign across different areas of government, state and local and federal government, and different programs with a goal of eliminating poverty. We have a patchwork of different programs with different justifications, and some are more sort of stigmatized or considered to be more that people deserve more, like unemployment benefits. Most people think workers are laid off should get those, but welfare for mothers, single mothers, we feel, you know, the political discourse is more negative toward them, and so on. So we don't have a coordinated program, and in that sense, it's not so much won or lost as much as we sort of just wandered away from it.
Do you think we need another war on poverty, at least to sort of reinvest ourselves as a society in ending poverty, or is there something else entirely needed right now?
Well, you know, there's a fairly simple way. If poverty is defined as not having income sufficient to meet needs, if we did something like a guaranteed income, we could end poverty. And you can do that by a reverse income tax at low incomes or by guaranteeing government jobs to people who don't have jobs. And these things are costly, although not that costly compared to what we're doing. We could do that. You know, that's a political decision. It doesn't obviously seem like anything like that's going to happen immediately, but I don't see why that sort of vision should not be at least within the realm of possibility.
And yet it's not something that you hear talked seriously about right now. Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. I think we have a very strong political streak in this country towards blaming poor people for being poor, towards not wanting to spend our money to help them in sort of an us-them perspective. And I think it's unfortunate that we don't have this sort of collective sense that a dollar spent helping a poor child is something that we're all going to benefit from down the road. I mean, it's not that we don't do anything, and certainly you know, even in this partisan environment, we don't have people who are at least not very successful politicians saying things like we should eliminate food stamps or Medicaid, and we're expanding medical care for some people. But we just don't have the collective will to do it at the moment.
Now, there is a sense now among some people that, you know, the time has come for an emphasis on personal accountability, that people need to be responsible for taking care of themselves and that they shouldn't, you know, rely on the government as much to get them out of poverty. How do you place that, you know, in a framework of poverty when you're looking at, you know, children who are below the poverty line, families? How does that square with personal accountability now?
Well, a personal accountability, I think, is sort of a it's more of an expression than a reality. Nobody's making it alone in this society, and everybody's either being helped by somebody or has been helped by somebody in the past. And of course, some people work harder than others and are more committed to succeeding than others. But the people who are poor in this country don't work less or try harder by and large than the people who are not poor. If you look at the jobs that the working poor do, they're not easier jobs or jobs that people don't work hard at doing. If you're talking about cooking and cleaning and carrying heavy loads and working outdoors and all those things that people do who are trying to get by or working two jobs that are part-time jobs. And, of course, children and the elderly who are not able to work and provide for themselves. We simply can't have that conversation with them. So it's not a fruitful way of framing the conversation, in my opinion.
Now, one of the contributors to this has said that one of the myths is that about poverty is that the government can't do anything about it. Where do you think that comes from? And do you think there's anything to that idea?
Well, there is a there's a line of thinking that says, you know, we spend billions and billions of dollars and we still have poor people, and so therefore nothing can be done. But and one of the things I do in the report that Council on Contemporary Families published today is just, you know, I just put in a table form some of the programs that we do have and that reduce that we know reduce the number of people living below the means needed to survive. You know, the food stamps, the earned income tax credit, women's, infants, and children's support. These are things that we spend money on right now, and they reduce poverty and reduce suffering and hardship and make lives more tolerable for people who are working and struggling to get by. And there's no reason to think we can't do those things or more.
We're talking right now with Philip Cohen, professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and the senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families, talking about where the war on poverty has gone since it started in 1964 and what is needed going forward.
And we'd like to hear your thoughts on those questions. Did the war on poverty, do you think, have successes? And what failures did you see? Did it end without success? Should there be a new war on poverty today, or should it be called something different? Give us a call. Here's how. You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Your thoughts and your questions for our guest, for that matter. You can also send an email. You can reach us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We always welcome your thoughts and feelings on the Central Time Facebook page as well. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're back in Central Time. Rob Ferret here.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We're speaking now with Philip Cohen, professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and the senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families, talking about the war on poverty, which began in 1964, looking at where we've been and the victories and failures that have come our way since then.
And we'd like to hear your thoughts. Did the war on poverty have successes? What were its failures? What do you think should change? Should there be a new anti-poverty effort? Give a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org.
We'll go to the phones now and take Deborah from Waukegan, Illinois. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have two comments that kind of are different ends of the same spectrum. And the contextually for me, these programs I don't think have ever really worked in this country because they've never been done right. You know, they've never been part of a concerted, unified, since the New Deal possibly, and even the New Deal was pretty haphazard. There's always been this context of having to shove something through. And in particular, the particular comment I wanted to make is that I was around when the Great Society began, and it made me much more of a gradualist because I think, first of all, Lyndon Johnson knew where the bodies were buried. He sort of shoved that through. Obviously, he had the context of the Kennedy assassination. And there was a listening for it, but it was very hastily put together. It didn't make any sense. Many large government programs don't make sense when they start. But in order to succeed, things like this need a long view and the ability to tweak. And in some ways, Medicare has kind of had that. I mean, Medicare is, it's very klutzy, but it's grown and developed over the years, and it's been a relatively successful program. But we have not had the same attitude in working with the poor. You know, when I began as a child welfare worker, you couldn't even reveal there was a man in the house. And there have just been cumbersome, stupid punitive regulations surrounding most of these programs. And I think they've just never offered enough. They've always been grudging.
All right. So they, Deborah, thank you so much for that thought. And I want to put that question to Philip Cohen. You know, have we been sort of piecemeal in our effort to affect policies and not really, you know, been in it for the long haul?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really good observation. I mean, some of our key programs like food stamps and school lunch have always sort of been half about subsidizing agriculture and half about feeding poor people. And our if you look at our medical system has been largely organized around the needs of pharmaceutical and insurance companies. So yeah, this is you could say if you're going to draw the system from scratch with the goal of eliminating poverty, this is definitely not how you would do it. But that's the political reality we live in. I do sort of like the idea of something you could lay over the top, like a guaranteed income or reverse income tax, where you say at the end of the year, if you meet some basic criteria, if your income has been below a certain amount, we're going to supplement it up to that amount. Most people are working. If they're not working at jobs, they're working taking care of their children. I don't think that would be too much of a crime to subsidize the few people who are lazy and took advantage of it. And the truth is they would spend that money, and that money would generate jobs and income for other people anyway. So, if you took a systematic approach and drew a line and said, we're just not, as a society, going to let people live in their cars or live below a certain level of income or have to work two or three jobs to feed their children. I mean, a person today working a minimum wage job, 2,000 hours, so 40 hours a week for 50 weeks, is only earning 80% of the poverty line for a family of three. So if we just raise that floor a little, I think we could all sleep a little better at night knowing that we were running a slightly more humane society.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Deborah. And let's move next to Rachel in Madison. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there. Thanks for the show. And based on what your guest just said, I'm changing my comments as we speak. But anyhow, a while ago, you had asked what might be a better name for the war on poverty. And my name is Justice for All.
What do you like about that name as opposed to a war on poverty?
Well, it denotes equity and a sort of the American values of everyone is equally valuable as a citizen. And I think it's inspired in part by many of us in Madison and around the state had a good friend pass away this year, Gene Farley, who was a family physician and promoted public health and the single-payer system all around the state. He and his wife, who are both physicians, promoted that. But not the reason for my call. His slogan was, everyone in, no one out. But while you were speaking, I was really touched by, as being a school teacher, I saw so many kids, I'll just take Madison, over half of our kids in school are living under the poverty line, federal poverty line. And much of the criterion for that is based on who is eligible for free and reduced lunch.
And I want to get our guest take on that. Thank you for the call, Rachel. And curious about whether justice should be part of the conversation on poverty. Is that any way to frame it? Or has that always been a thread there, Philip?
Well, that appeals to me, and it appeals to a sizable minority of the American public, I think. I would be happy to frame the conversation that way. I think one way to think about the question of fairness and equity is, and when we think about the way the welfare reform is handled, it's all been about work, and people have to work or they're not going to get support from their fellow citizens through the government. But I started to say before, just about everybody does work. Some people maybe never get off the couch for whatever reason. They're probably mentally ill. But the people who have children and can't get a job or a job that pays enough, people who can't manage to hold a job while they are taking care of their family responsibilities, that's work. It's productive. It takes effort. It takes creativity. It produces something of value that other people benefit from. And the idea of spreading resources around to help make sure that people who do that kind of work are also cared for, to me, I guess justice is a good word for it. It also seems like common sense.
Now, we've seen a lot of income stagnation, especially among the middle class over the past several years, maybe going back farther than that. How has that affected the rates of poverty in this country?
Well, the way I see that is sort of that the programs that we have are swimming against the tide. And one of the tides we have is rising inequality or falling wages for a certain sizable segment of the population, basically the people who don't have higher education. I have in the report that, you know, people with men, especially with less than a college degree, have had their year-round earnings fall at from 5 to 10% in the last 20 years. That's really hard to it's hard to organize an economy and a society when you have a large portion of the population with falling incomes, and that's for full-time year-round workers. The college graduates may have insecurity and hardship of their own, but income poverty is mostly not their problem. But we've seen a pulling apart of the top and the bottom, and that's a challenge economically, and it's a challenge to support the people at the bottom. But it's also a challenge politically because it opens up a divide in the experience of how people and how people see the world between those who are at the bottom and those who are above that chasm between them.
What would you like to tell people or urge people to do to think differently about the people experiencing poverty in our country as they make policies and they just inform attitudes? What would you tell them?
Well, I'd like us to recognize the work that people do, even if they're not getting paid for it, is work, especially childcare and caring for people in their own families, and something that we all benefit from. And I guess I'd encourage people to think creatively. If you imagine the big pots of money and resources that we have in a very wealthy society, and say, how could we move these resources around instead of thinking in terms of the narrow programs and policies that we have right now? Back up a little and think, how would we do it if we were going to start from scratch? And think creatively. I mean, if it's difficult if you're trying to write the policy, but we're average citizens. We don't have to worry about the details right now. We can argue about the vision and the goal for what kind of society we want to live in, and then try to bring about the politics to make it happen.
Philip, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
We've been speaking to Philip Cohen, professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and the senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families. We've been talking about what's happened with the war on poverty since it started in 1964.